It is March 27th, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, the Geek News, the first half and the second half, will invite you to participate with questions and comments about technology.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Today we'll be covering geek news. In the first half, we'll be inviting you to participate via calls. In the second, the numbers are 476-2800, toll-free 1-800-655-5877. I'll give you out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. The theme song today was by Al Luckow. We invite anybody to participate by giving us theme songs, making art for the show pages. You can do that by going to geekspeak.org and sending us an email. And of course, this is a Creative Commons show, which means that if you participate with your content, it's free to the world afterwards. Creative Commons, non-commercial, share and share alike. Today on Geekspeak, we have Mr. Miles Elam. He's a Slacker and computer junkie and Java programmer. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
We also have Al Luckow. Al Luckow is a new media architect. Good morning, Al.
Hi, everybody.
And Ben Jaffe. And Ben Jaffe is a student sometimes, but right now he's a teacher more than anything else, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I don't even know what I am anymore, but aloha.
You got a business card. Maybe you should give it to me and I'll just read that.
I've got a business card. Well, it doesn't even describe what I do. It's just like I do this and then.
He's a video guy and a media guy.
And audio and video and graphics.
And the lineup for the Geek News coming up, we're going to do a little story, a couple eco stories, if you will. We're going to find out what's going on with Russian mathematics geniuses. After that, we're going to talk about April Fools and some missing galaxies and a little bit about Facebook maybe spreading throughout the rest of the web, if you will, or at least the like feature of that. In any case, those are our stories that were lined up, and we're going to start first off talking about mushrooms with Al. You like mushrooms, don't you?
They're okay. You know, I'm not – I mean, I eat mushrooms. I don't like go out and – say, oh, we ran out of mushrooms, honey. Go get some mushrooms.
But you do go out on your walks all the time and take photos of mushrooms.
Yes, I photograph lots of mushrooms. I have tons of photographs of mushrooms from my iPhone because they're very cool looking. But I don't know what they are. I'm not like a mushroom expert, so I don't sit around picking them and eating them. I just like the way they look. But speaking of mushrooms, as some of you may know, I'm not slaving away here at GeekSpeak. I work as a designer. And one of the things I've always tried to do is incorporate recycled materials whenever possible. When I first started doing this in the early 90s, it wasn't always easy. Recycled materials like paper, you know, for example, were either more expensive or just not available. But it's
we're talking about like for packaging and stuff?
For packaging, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or for printing or, you know, a lot of times I do, you know, recycled stocks for cars and stuff. But it's different now. And frankly, I can't see any excuse for not specifying recycled materials, especially for packaging.
Yeah.
And one thing that really bugs me is styrofoam. It just feels wrong. It's big, hard to dispose of, and it makes that squeaky noise everybody hates.
Ugh.
So I ran across this packaging material recently that looks truly different. It's called Eco Cradle, natural packaging. Eco Cradle? Echo. I don't know. It's Eco Cradle, I guess. And this packaging is 100% compostable and biodegradable. It's made from naturally occurring waste products like buckwheat hulls, rice hulls, and cotton burrs.
I like the shell of the material that we actually normally consume.
Yeah, just useless stuff. And it uses filamentous fungi.
Oh, yeah, filamentous fungi. Sure.
Filamentous fungi, which is basically a mushroom root, to bond the packaging into almost any shape. So
it's glue.
Really looks a lot like styrofoam, and it's white, and it just, you can make it into any shape, and it uses regionally based agricultural byproducts. So like a factory in Texas or China might use cottonseed hulls, and a factory in Virginia or Spain might use rice hulls or soybean hulls.
Right.
So it uses local stuff.
So you take this kind of cellulose material that we don't actually normally digest, we get rid of in the mm-hmm. production of food or of clothing.
Right.
And then it adds this glue, which is actually from a fungus root, which is kind of cool, mm-hmm. and produces a material that you can then mold like putty or like styrofoam, I guess.
Yeah,
the best
it'd be just like styrofoam. And when they make this stuff, it's made without heat, pressure, or petroleum. So the process of manufacturing it is extremely energy efficient. And when you're done with this eco-cradle stuff, you know, you get your electronic, you know, your new TiVo or whatever, and you pull all this stuff out, you can just crumble it up and throw it in your garden as mulch.
Oh, cool.
Which is pretty neat. I mean, just to be able to – I mean, I always like if you buy something, you get all this styrofoam – and you're like, you can't recycle it. No. So you stick this stuff in your garbage can. It feels like you're doing something like illegal or wrong.
Yeah.
Or and it's not like you are, but you kind of are.
Yeah.
You know, and this stuff is here and we can use it. I just feel like, you know, if you know, I don't really see any downside to this stuff. And if you're a designer or a manufacturer listening out there, I hope you're considering materials like this. And if you have some great environmentally conscious idea, don't keep it a secret. You know, send it in and we'll tell everyone.
Yeah, definitely.
This, I mean, it's just, you know, when you buy stuff, especially electronics, it's always got stuff. This, you know.
All the packaging waste.
Yeah.
I remember, I mean, a few companies actually promote that they don't use very much packing materials. Mm-hmm. Let me ask about this stuff. Is it more expensive to use this material than using styrofoam at this point?
Right. That is the question
right.
that I think
Of course, it's hard to find out because you have to get a quote. Like,
yes.
It's not like they've got list prices on their website.
Yes. And I tried calling them and they weren't open and I emailed them to say, you know, is it relatively more expensive? And, you know, it doesn't say on their website whether it is or not. But, you know, ultimately, really... but when you just, I mean, everybody's had this feeling of this big chunk of styrofoam.
And investing in it, even if it is a little bit more expensive, might be worth it.
Yeah. I mean, it I think it really is.
Right. Well,
I mean,
thank you.
It's just, and it's white. It doesn't look like, you know, some gross thing. And,
yeah.
Of course, then again, I don't know anybody who's personally used the stuff because, so, you know, maybe it may smell like horse manure. I don't know. Which would be a downside.
It's perfect in every way. It eats your children. But other than that, it's great.
Right.
This stuff, I mean, I've seen the spoons they're supposedly made out of. Potato product, right?
Oh, yeah,
that's kind of, I'm assuming, those are pretty hard, of course.
And they feel like plastic.
Yeah, they do.
And they're delicious.
If you
Well, technically, they are a plastic. They're just not a petroleum-based plastic.
Do they actually transmit the polymers into something that's like a petroleum?
Well, let me ask you this. Does it feel like a potato when you're using it as a spoon?
No.
Then chances are probably.
Well, it doesn't have eyes.
I always assumed they were using a glue in compression. They weren't molecularly changing the...
Oh, okay. So I'm wrong.
I don't know.
It always... Wait. No, it is a polymer. I'm getting the scientist.
Dr. Don, hi. Come on over here. How do the potato spoons work?
It's a polymerization process.
Well, so it's really, the material that they're creating is the plastic at that point.
Plasticky.
That's a loose interpretation, but thank you very much.
I wonder if you could make French fried potato spoons.
Sure. Ooh. Let's go. Tasty.
Oh, no, better idea. French fry potato spoons that you use for milkshakes. Right. Have you ever eaten a French fry and a milkshake and put that together?
No.
It tastes like a donut.
I'm
not kidding. It's amazing. Just, it's so
good.
Goodbye,
if there are Dr. children Dunn. Listening
Everybody
out there.
Say goodbye, Dr. Dunn.
Bye, Don.
Bye, Dr. Dunn.
Bye. Bye.
It's good having a doctor in the house.
It is. Please do not mix French fries and shakes.
See, and now I can't help but think about the fact that I was reading some stories about places around the U.S. that still call them freedom fries. Still, after the person who invented the term.
It's because you can do what you want with them, right? You're free to do what you want with them.
Yes, I'm sure that's why what people had in mind.
Let's move on to the next news story. Thank you very much for the mushroom story. Mm-hmm. We have other eco information.
Indeed. I have a very quick mention and then a story. The mention is 8:30. Darn it, what day? 8:30 on Earth, I'm talking about Earth Hour, and I put it in my calendar. Can't believe I've forgotten. I think
some point in the future you should focus on the Earth.
Dear. Okay. Well, in any case, I'm looking at my calendar right now, and it's going to be 8:30 local time on a particular day that I'm looking up
News
right now.
Fail.
Moving
News
on.
Fail. News fail.
Anyway, look up Earth Hour, and at 8:30 on that day, 8:30 p.m. whatever local time, you're supposed to turn off all your electronics.
Oh, cool.
And so, and it's actually going to happen with the Eiffel Tower. A lot of different. Awesome places that you never, ever, ever see dark. But my actual story, see, this is, I wasn't prepared for that one. Oh, today. Okay, so someone just informed me. Today is Earth Hour.
8:30 this evening?
8:30 p.m. today. Okay. Turn off
It's actually
everything.
Right now, so goodbye.
Goodbye.
Wait, that doesn't work for radio.
Can't
very
work
well.
Here for us.
No.
Yeah. So, but don't turn off your car if you're driving. You know, like just,
and pacemakers stay on all the
time. Just think about it. You know. But anyway, but that's not my story. We're spending all this time.
Wait. So
on
does
it.
That mean like an old, you know, 1959 Chevy should still be on the road? But if you have any car made after 1990 that has a processor, you need to shut your car off.
Yeah, exactly.
Always looking for a loophole, aren't you, Miles?
Well, I was thinking I have a hybrid. I'm totally screwed. <You're, laughs>
You can't even stop your car. It's too energy efficient then.
Okay, so my actual news story is about printers. And I'll run through this one since we spent all this time. But so printers are pretty cheap. A lot of times you get a printer for free when you buy a new computer, or you can buy it for like something like $20 after a rebate. It's like ridiculously cheap. And they come with an ink cartridge already installed. Oftentimes, if they're a color printer, they come with color ink already installed. So you think printers are pretty cheap, right? Until you run out of ink and then you have to replace the ink.
And then you have to give up your firstborn child.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the ink for the printer is actually more expensive than the printer that you bought, which had ink inside of it. And right. So like
except
sometimes
that the cartridge that comes with it, I just got one of these. The cartridge is smaller than the maximum that can fit into it. They don't give you a full size cartridge. Ooh. A lot of times. They give you a mid size or like the smallest model available. Right.
That's sketchy.
And then the cartridge is this big plastic complicated thing with springs on it and wheels and gears and, you know.
Even worse. Now they have chips that say how long it's been since you put it in. So even if they have ink in there, they tell the printer, I'm done.
That's an RFID chip, yeah.
Yeah.
I actually use a printer that's a Tektronix, I think it's Tektronix Phaser, and it uses wax blocks, which is the most efficient ink, if you ask me. You just drop the blocks in. There's no packaging. There's no waste. There's no, here, recycle this print cartridge. You just drop the block in.
And how much does that printer cost?
It's normally priced the same price. It's just that the ink's kind of pricey. You know, the wax block is, they still make up the cost of all that plastic junk and the price, I guess. Mm-hmm.
So that brings me to the point that printer ink is actually one of the most expensive liquids that you can buy. It's about 60 cents a milliliter. I just did the calculation this morning for HP number 45 black ink. That's not even color ink.
Okay,
that's just
black ink. Is 60?
60 cents per milliliter. So to put that in context, penicillin is 8 cents per milliliter. Human blood from Red Cross is 40 cents per milliliter.
Oh, man.
So printer black printer ink, the cheapest the ink you can find, it's 60 cents a milliliter.
So then it's cheaper to print in blood.
Actually.
Well, I know what I can do now.
I don't know if I'm rotting.
So the devil's not actually evil, he's just cost saving.
Here, this contract's in blood, but it's only because it's cheaper.
I mean, if it worked, you could print with 1985 Dom Perignon, you would actually save about half the amount of money.
Wow.
It's really,
that is really expensive.
It's so expensive.
Yeah.
So this actually comes to mind. Are you bringing up the university?
Yes, I'm bringing up the university. So
he's getting around to it.
Three things.
That's another. The second part is so much shorter.
No, it will be. It will be. I'm going to run through these.
If you don't run out of ink first,
what can you do about this? Right? Why can you just spend less money on ink? One is you can print less, but that's not really solving the problem. That's just, you know, doing it less.
On the contrary, it is addressing the problem quite directly. Well, but I get your point.
Yeah. It's not okay. Never mind. Fine, Miles, you win. But another thing is you can actually change the font you print in. And so the news story that prompted all of this reading on my part is University of Wisconsin Green Bay, they switched their email system's default email font from Arial to Century Gothic. And that actually has saved them about 30% on ink.
They could go to avant-garde and even save them more.
Changing your email font?
Yeah, because people print emails. Right?
Don't print emails.
Don't print emails.
It just makes me angry.
People do it anyway. It's like don't click on spam links. People do it anyway.
If it saves any bits when it's transferred.
Well, the hard drives weigh a little bit less.
Now you're just trying to start a fight.
I know. Never mind.
If you make the font smaller, isn't this email smaller?
Yeah, actually, they could make the font smaller. No, that would be the same.
Well, the hard drives do weigh less, so okay. It's nice because it's not as thick of a font.
Less electrons.
I know, I'm hurting everyone's
Man,
head.
You know what? We're just not doing our geek thing today. Okay.
But it uses...
The font is thinner, really a lot thinner, Gothic.
The font uses less ink. It's Century Gothic as opposed to Arial. That's what they did. But the downside of that is that Century Gothic is actually a little bit larger, which is maybe good to use on a term paper because it stretches out the number of pages that you have printed. But the disadvantage is it uses more paper with something like email. The other thing that I want to just mention is a product called EcoFont, which is relatively new. And this is a really cool idea. What they do is they have this font which has little holes punched in it, right? In the actual black part of the font, there are little holes punched. And when you're looking at it normally from a decent reading distance, you can't see the holes. But in reality, there's less ink used because it's not printing in the little, very, very small holes in the font. So you can find that. You can get a sans serif version for free off of their website. They also make software that lets you, I guess, ecoify or whatever you want to say, any of your fonts. So you can choose whatever font you want, even a font that's specifically for your business, and you can punch all the holes in it. And that is a pay thing, and it's not available in their web shop yet. It's relatively new.
And
it's a cool idea.
That's you know, it seems like a micro thing, but maybe in the long run it saves... You know, there's always been toner savers.
It's 25%, up to 25% of your ink or your toner, just by putting these little holes in.
And I guess if you make sure it's a sans serif font, you know, all those serifs take up so much extra ink. I mean, it's ridiculous. Down with serif fonts.
Al, you were recommending...
The legibility drops a little bit, but...
It takes you twice as long to read it.
Yeah.
And, of course, you've got your 100-watt light bulb on while you're reading it.
Yeah.
So, Al, you mentioned another font that might work as well, because you know...
You know, Avant-Garde is, you know, any kind of font that's a lightweight, you know. There's a lot of light versions of fonts, you know, Accidents, Grotesque, Light. You know, Avant-Garde has got a lot of X width, so it takes up more space, like you were talking about the term paper. Also looks kind of girly, if you ask me. But there's lots of fonts that are... I mean, there's a zillion fonts out there
that are light.
If you want to know about fonts, ask Al.
Don't even bring up the subject around me.
I just want to push the idea of not printing email. I don't print email. I never print email. I mean, the last time I printed email, I mean, you know what I do print? I print the emails sometimes. Not even do that anymore. I just rely on my inbox. But, you know, when you get a license, emailed to you, an invoice, I do print those kinds of things.
But if you printed it in blood, it would be cheaper.
Yeah, that's true.
I think there would be clotting issues.
Maybe.
But where would you get all the gerbils is the question.
That's a question.
So, Miles, what's up with Russia?
Well, I was actually, if I could, taking another story because it would make a nice segue. Oh,
okay. Segue away.
Because of the comments, I don't like Avant-Garde because it's kind of girly. Because, you know, that also presupposes that girly is bad.
Well, it's kind of 70s-ish. It's like what you'd use for perfumes.
Oh, see, now you're changing your story, though.
Well, it's, you know, right.
The reason why I bring it up is because I have a story about the American Association of University Women, who published a study funded by the National Science Foundation to look for bias against women in what are called STEM fields, which is science, technology, engineering, mathematics. And lo and behold, they found bias. Now, when people might poo-poo it and say, well, look who's doing the study, or, you know, women's brains don't work that way, you have, when they did a study on 6th and 7th graders who scored more than 700 on the math SAT. Mm-hmm. 30 years ago, boys outnumbered girls 13-1. Mm-hmm. But today, it's only about 3-1. And that can't be explained away by biology. Biology doesn't work that fast.
Right.
So
you're saying is that if there was no bias, society bias, it was just actual genetics, and that you wouldn't see that change.
Well,
it's clearly a social thing.
Yeah. Right. And this is not to say that there are no differences. Many scientists know that there are differences between a male and female brain. Mm-hmm. But those differences don't translate directly to a skill. You can't say, oh, well, that difference means bad at math.
Right.
You know, that doesn't actually occur. And when they would interview many different women in various fields, like, for example, the first woman astronaut, she would say when she was taking her engineering classes – that when she'd ask a question, the professor would give her that look of like, why are you even asking that? Whereas if a male student asked a very similar question, the professor would say, oh, astute observation, that we have a lot of this bias, which is right. It isn't so much a, oh, well, as a girl, you shouldn't be here. It's a lot more subtle.
Right. But that subtlety does have a major effect.
Right. And they cite the study where they ask people, you know, or if they tell people, I wonder why men are better at math than women are, and then give a test, the men score better than the women because there's the expectation that it actually is viewable. You can see that difference.
There's lots of studies like this. I recall one that was very much like that. Just the way you ask the question sets a person up to feel okay about not trying as hard, for example. Right. Or makes them really concentrate hard because they have an expectation about them.
Right. In one experiment, they were testing what they called contrast sensitivity ability. It's a completely made-up skill.
Okay.
And men and women in one group were told there was no difference between the sexes in this sensitivity. And they basically asked to rate their own ability. But when they were told when men were better at it, men rated their skills far higher than women did.
Rated their own skills? Or...
Yeah, they were asked,
formed on the
here's
test.
This thing, contrast sensitivity ability. It's made up.
Okay.
But they said, like, here's this thing. How well do you think you do?
Wait, did they say what it was?
Or no.
Was it completely...
It was completely made up.
Just a skill.
Yeah, it's contrast sensitivity ability. My ability to detect when there's a difference between things. Like,
right.
That's kind of what it sounds
sure,
like.
Sure, sure.
Just completely
so that's really
made up.
All it was just a statement.
Right. If they said there was no difference, then when they were asked to rate their ability, they were fairly even. But when the group was told that men were better at it, men rated their skills far higher than the women did. Like, it's an actual thing. And okay. So the bias actually exists. Over time, if you look over since the study began, or data was collected from 1966, the number of women in getting doctorates in math was a little over 10%, not much.
Right.
I'm sorry, not in math, in biology. And today, it's approaching 50%. I mean, it was a very steep climb. And what's curious about this graph that I'm looking at, unfortunately, you'd have to click on the link when we put it up on the show to look at it.
All this information is up at geekspeak.org, by the way.
Computer science, which is a relatively young field, basically started around that time. And that graph shows that in computer science, the amount of women getting into that field was about even with the rise in biology.
Mm-hmm.
And then around the mid to late 70s, that curve changed and became far more flat. And so whereas in biology, it's raised up all the way, getting close to 50%, for women in computer science, still today, it's only barely above 20% getting PhDs in the field. And you can't just, considering the fact that early cases were much higher, there was something else going on there.
Could that just be because computer science is most of the time boring?
As boring as something like math, because math is up at the 30% mark.
Yeah, interesting. All right, well, thank you.
Is beating computer science, even though computer science is a much more tangible, hands-on.
Yeah. All right, thank you very much for that. We are in the mid time of the show, so I got to mention to everyone that you're listening to Geek Speak on KUSP Central Coast Public Radio, Santa Cruz. You can find out more about QSP at kusp.org. Anything we talk about on today's program, we mention and have links and have write-ups and such at geekspeak.org. So you're welcome to go there and look up today's show, which of course is the 27th of March 2010. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. We are taking calls with questions and comments about technology now. Rick Philman's in the other room waiting to take your call. You can ask us anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800. That's in the 831 area code, 476-2800. Or you can call us toll-free at 1-800-655-KUSP. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. While we're waiting for the calls to flow in, let's talk about the 1st of April. Al?
Oh, yeah. Of course, we need to have the top 10 computer office-related pranks for April Fools.
We're not endorsing these. We're just mentioning them.
Yes. Actually, these are all of these are harmless kind of fun. pranks. Mm-hmm. So I kind of filtered them that way. And I'm going to mention all of them, but I'm just not going to describe all of them. You have to go to geekspeak.org, and then there'll be links to show you how to do all these specifically. So I just kind of
want to... really are endorsing these.
Well, we're endorsing geekspeak.org.
Yes, geekspeak.org.
It's a trick to get you to go there. Okay. But anyhow, the first one, which sounds pretty cool, is make all of the phones in your office ring simultaneously. And this one actually costs you about $10, but it's a prank that you can kind of do using Skype, because Skype lets you run a conference call with up to 24 people simultaneously. But you can put a mixture of Skype accounts and phone numbers.
Right.
So basically, you can, when you hit call, it's going to call every single one at the same exact time, which nice. I think is pretty funny. Second one,
and then
is,
when people actually hook up, connect, they're all like, talking.
All to they'll hear is each other saying hello.
Nice.
And so everybody would be like, oh, what? What do we do?
I have an addition to that prank. You could do it. It would take more setup because you'd have to set up each of the phones, but you could do it with Google Voice. And that way you could just call that one number wherever you were, mobile, even away from a computer, and it would ring all of the phones.
Nice.
And then the first one to pick up would get the call.
More ideas on how to do that at geekspeak.org.
Yeah.
Second?
The other one is the optical mouse confusion. Most people now don't have mice with a little ball under it. It's usually a sensor. So you can actually put a piece of tape on the bottom of a mouse and just totally confuse the heck. And if you color the tape the same color as the mouse, it'll confuse the heck out of somebody when they try to use their mouse. It'll just totally – you got to put it on the sensor on the bottom. That's one that's pretty good. The other one is – this is number three, a screenshot of wallpaper. You know, this is sort of an old trick where you just take a screenshot of your friend's computer and then you hide all the icons, minimize open applications, and set the taskbar on auto hide. This is on a Windows machine.
Okay.
And then watch the reactions as they attempt to select any icon, because it's actually one big picture of the desktop. You know, so it's really not the actual icons.
Oh,
it's
right,
a picture
right.
of the icons. So that's a good one. Another way to drive a Windows user insane, is if they're not already insane, is you can set any specific icon, like Firefox, Internet Explorer, or Outlook, to be an automatic shutoff button. You just have to follow the instructions on the link that you can go to our site to see. You can also do, and this is another Windows machine one, rotate the screen. So, and this works on most Intel computers. It's very easy to see if it does. You just simply press Control, Alt, Arrow direction, and then it basically rotates the entire screen. So when somebody comes up to their computer, it's completely sideways, everything.
Right.
And all you do is just use that key command to make it rotate the rest of the
way.
And
on a Macintosh, you can do that too by going to the System Preferences, Displays, and rotating it.
Oh, you can do it. Oh, you can do it.
Not on laptops.
Not on laptops.
Not on this screen that's connected.
It has to be a regular
connection. Yeah. There's no shortcut for that?
Not that I know of.
You're the king
of
shortcuts. You should know that.
If Ben doesn't know about it, it doesn't exist.
You'd have to use UI scripting and Apple script.
And then there's the old paper cup tabletop trick where you put a bunch of paper cups on somebody's desk, and then you staple them all together, and then you fill them all up with water. And, you know, they try to pick up one, and, you know, it's...
That's just mean, though. That can ruin a laptop.
And then there's the cracked LCD screensaver.
Nice.
You know, that ends up looking like a cracked LCD. So basically, go to geekspeak.org, and you can see links to all these things. And there's also another link up there that shows a bunch of pictures of a lot of people who have done these things. You know, they've taken the Post-it notes and completely covered the entire wall and the person's desk and their chair and everything with Post-it notes. You know, this is kind of a fun thing, you know.
Not exactly eco-friendly, that one.
Well,
this one's not so bad. There's also the HP copier prank.
You
seen that one?
You can reuse the Post-its.
That's true.
The HP copier one is, this copier has been upgraded with the latest firmware to have voice activation. Please repeat things over and over again because it's while it's in the learning process. And then you place it next to the copier.
And the copier starts talking.
Yeah. And so people start going, copy. Copy. Copy.
Oh, we're such geeks. Yeah. Hey, the GeekSpeak website, geekspeak.org, does have this content about 20 minutes after off air. So, all right. From Big Sur, Jim, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning. What's your question?
This has to do with your earlier discussion about printer and inks. I bought an Epson Artisan 800 last year. It's a multifunction printer, you know, fax and scan and all that stuff. I only use the black ink, and last week, my printer wouldn't print for me, and it said, you're out of ink in 5 of the 6 colors that comes with this, one color being black, the one I use and have replaced.
The other ones you've never used, but they're supposedly out.
Yes.
Right.
And not only that, but the printer would not let me use black to print. I couldn't print anything, even though I had black ink.
This is the kind of thing that just disgusts me. And
it makes me crazy, and I want people to know, be careful if you're buying an Epson printer. I called Epson. I said, what's going on here? I never use these inks. They said, we flush the ink through the nozzle every time you turn the machine on or off to keep the nozzle clear.
You know, that has to be a fake, because if they did that, all of that ink would be somewhere in your machine, right?
Normally, yeah, where's it go?
Right. There's a big pool of it somewhere on your desk? No.
And that's a 6-cartridge ink printer. So this is another example of, you know, they get you to buy the printer, and then it's the crack pipe phenomenon, you know?
Well, they've figured out a way to jack up, you know, your use of ink. It just makes me crazy.
This is exactly why I believe very strongly in that kind of the maker, you own the stuff you get. Because what they're doing is they're using technology to try to force you to use a certain type of ink. All the ink is actually the same in all these things. I mean, there are high-end inks for printing for archival work. But basically, you could buy some other ink brand to put in your machine, but they're actually trying to make it so that you can't do that by intelligence on the ink cartridges.
Yeah.
And so you're really in a place where you have to start hacking and cracking at your printer to make it function. And, of course, they're doing this because their model says if we sell a machine to them and then we continually have a cost from them buying new ink, we can make that printer almost free and we still make money.
Yeah.
And from my perspective, I'd much rather pay money for a good printer and not be stuck in this environment.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that some printer company will come out and say, you know what? You can use any ink you want. In fact, we'll sell it to you in milk jugs for $4. Yeah.
That's actually kind of what laser printers are, especially with refillable cartridges. So the older HP laser
printers are
very much
like
that.
I'm getting rid of a laser printer right now, an old HP 8500 that it's just finally bit the dust, but it's like 10 years old. I mean, and I just got another. So I do a lot of printing. So I buy color laser printers, and they have toner in them, and you get the things.
And the toners are the toners.
I have the Tektronix for my higher end color work, and that's the wax blocks. And you can buy multiple different brands.
And this
of wax
really
blocks.
Has to do with business related printers versus home printers.
But people look at it and they say, "Oh, this printer is so expensive. I want to buy that one. I want to buy this cheap one." But what they don't realize is they're buying this cheap thing. They're getting stuck with these expensive ink cartridges, and then you end up throwing the printer away, and it just creates all this waste.
You know, some company like Consumer Reports must have handled this at some point. There must be a way to look up and find out what is a good printer to buy.
I say we just go over to Epson with torches and pitchforks.
I'll find out for that. I just saw an ad, I think it was for Lexmark, and their whole pitch on the ad was, you won't use a lot of ink here. We don't waste ink. And it's cheap. So I just call in and I mention that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
That's actually pretty funny to me, because Lexmark is the one that lost the lawsuit a few years back with regard to other people were taking Lexmark cartridges and refilling them and selling them as refilled cartridges. And Lexmark sued them, saying, no, you can't do that. Our ink cartridges and the like are our own property. And that's
right.
And they lost it.
Good. Glad to hear it. More printer companies should lose that fight. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it makes me sick. More expensive than penicillin? Ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, like by 8 times.
Absolutely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's not that complex.
You could print with penicillin. That would be interesting.
From Santa Cruz, Hal, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning. I called in at the end of the show last week. You guys were talking about antivirus programs.
Yeah.
And I guess none of you was familiar with Avira, which I've been using for a few months now.
We added that to the website after your call to Rick.
Okay. Well, so I found the site. I found a couple sites that may have a more recent review than someone mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually rate Avast first, Avira second, and ABG third in their narrative. But in the table of results, actually, Avira comes out on top, Avast second, and ABG third. That's at freebies.about.com. That's where I found that.
I think I put that up on the GeekSpeak website for last week's show, the 20th of March.
Yeah.
So take a peek at our website, make sure that we got it right, Hal, and then let us know.
Okay, well, I'll just tell you that I've been using it, and I ended up upgrading to the premium. I don't know why.
A lot of people do.
And but I wasn't, you know, unhappy with the free one. And
all right, well, thank you.
And there's a lot of user control over when it scans, et cetera. So.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Hal, for the call.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Another thing that's kind of frustrating, virus protection.
I wonder if you'd have a problem with viruses if you printed with penicillin. Or would you breed super viruses?
You probably breed super viruses.
I don't think you can print virus email with penicillin. I think that wouldn't work.
But it would. But a virus.
To be clear, penicillin is not for viruses.
So. Oh, that's right.
But anyway, moving on.
Bacteria. Right.
From Aptos, Jamie, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, I love your show.
Thank you.
What I want to do is I want to watch network television over the internet, and I'm wondering how to accomplish that best.
Live or recorded?
Well, I have Netflix. I know about Hulu, things like that. I'd like to find out live. For example, PBS shows or NBC, CBS. Are things like that available over the internet?
Not to my knowledge.
If the station has made it available. PBS.org does have a lot of their shows that you can stream. Comedy Central does the same thing.
Not live.
Live, I
That's
guess
the thing.
Not.
Most of it's recording.
I do know of one solution. It's not particularly legal, but it's Jason TV, and it's a video streaming site. And a lot of times users will submit streams, and then they'll get shut down by the content providers as they go on. But, like, for example, the Super Bowl, you can probably find the Super Bowl when it's on because it's very, very popular, and a lot
so
of people
saying
are watching
is that,
it.
What we're saying is someone sets up a card for their computer, they grab the live feed, then they start broadcasting that live feed, and then they put this up on Jason.com so everyone can see all the people that are broadcasting on the internet. It's not. I mean, it's not something that the content owners want to
yeah.
have happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the same thing as when people upload television shows to YouTube,
yeah.
except it's for live.
It's Jason.tv.
Yeah.
It's
not
so
Jason.
Frustrating is that I want this so often because I don't have television in my home, but every once in a while I want to see something live. So mm-hmm. I'm going and bumming TV time at someone else's house, like mm-hmm. Al
yeah.
for Dance with the Stars.
Yeah,
I've been
meaning to talk about it.
Well, yeah. I keep on showing up at certain times during the day.
Well, I'm trying to avoid a cable bill.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
things like on Discover Channel, stuff like that, like they might have snippets of it, or you might find it like on Hulu and stuff if you want how it's made, shows like that.
So. You know, there is an article on how to, Mac Life magazine, two months ago came out with an article on how to change completely to PC-based TV watcher,
mm-hmm.
and a guy went and did the whole, and Mercury News also did that.
You can, I mean, local broadcasting yeah. stations that are doing the HD broadcasting, you can get a card and receive them over the air. There's sometimes it's quite a few
yeah,
stations.
Yeah, but if you're up here in the mountains.
There's two or three stations that you can
yeah.
get, even HD quality.
Where do you live?
Aptos.
In Aptos.
Oh, Aptos. So you could get regular broadcast TV then.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We get a couple
free.
Channels. In fact,
yeah.
I just have an aerial on the roof.
Yeah, yeah. That's
and
great.
So I get a few channels. I'm just trying to be cheap and want to get a little bit more content.
The thing that's so frustrating to me is that, of course, the station should be broadcasting online. And the reason they don't is why exactly? Because they have a perfect metric on who watches what. There's all these reasons that would make a lot of sense.
Because they would be in competition with the cable providers. Cable
yeah.
providers, they have a lot of lucrative deals with.
That's really
so
what it
to
is,
actually
yeah.
cut them off would be deleterious
of course,
to their profit.
In some
level.
Sense, the cable provider is the internet provider. So you're in kind of this strange space.
Yeah. yeah.
Where did you say that article was?
Well, there's one in Mac Life magazine, which, you know, it's Mac-based, but it's also tells you how a guy went through and got all the pieces to do it. And there's also another one. It was in the Mercury News, and, you know, I can't remember when it was. It was probably within the last month or so. It was the reviewing guy that does the reviews in the business section of electronics, and he talked about how he went out and bought all the right stuff. You know, why don't we do a thing on it next week or something on how to do this?
We do have a topic next week. We've got a guest coming in from the Omni Group. We're going to be talking about OmniFocus. And so probably not the best. I mean, we'll cover a little bit next
week. We'll put some links up and so give you some ideas on how to do this. Because there's no website that's conglomerating all this stuff that you can go to. Because really that's all you'd need would be like a little Mac Mini or some file server and then hook it to your TV. But there isn't really one at the moment. There's a bunch of ways you can do stuff, but nothing that seamless.
Thanks for the call.
I have a real quick follow-up question on this.
Okay.
I'd like to actually watch it on a television, and what I did is I have an old computer with XP on it, and I got a video card with
mm-hmm.
a video out. Is that the most straightforward way to do that?
Yeah.
If you're wanting to watch stuff live?
I'm sorry?
If you want to watch stuff live, then the aerial antenna makes more sense to watch it on a TV. It
well,
seems like there's a lot of complexity there.
I think he wants to do content that's not I'm not saying if I had something
that was on the PC.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much the, if you're in a Windows house and you've got an old Windows machine with a video card that does S-video or composite out, yeah, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, use it.
Relatively simple, yeah. Definitely. Uh-huh. And, of course, there's a lot of remote controls out there that actually interface with the Windows machines. So.
Right. It's a black box between the two.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, okay. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Another thing you can sometimes do is DVI to HDMI. So if you have an HD TV and it doesn't have a DVI in, you can do the DVI out of your computer and convert that to HDMI, bring it into the TV that way.
From Chicago, Sunil, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, Geeks. I just had a question on I'm in the middle of setting up a family picture sharing website, and I'm using Google Sites as well as Picasa. I'm just like putting up pictures on Picasa and using the embed code to put up the albums on the site.
Uh-huh.
I'm just wondering if Google Sites is the best or if there's another simple sort of website creator and if Picasa is the best for this purpose as opposed to Flickr or some other photo sharing site.
I think we all do it different ways. I personally use... can you turn your stream down while we're chatting? I personally use two different things, SmugMug and Flickr, and both of them are... I use a pro version. Basically, I pay for both of them. And I like that a lot. It syncs with my. They both sync well with my with plugins with Lightroom, which is my large photo archive. I've got about 50,000 photos in Lightroom, and so I can choose which ones I want to have on which service, and it seems to hook up pretty cleanly. Al, how are you sharing pictures?
You know, I do a variety of methods, but SmugMug, like you mentioned, is a very elegant, sharp-looking. Cool. I mean, if you want to have like really cool-looking things with the option of like maybe expanding into some higher end thing, SmugMug is really the best designed. Flickr is the most popular and probably the easiest and cheapest.
And Flickr is great when you're. It's easy because a lot of people use Flickr, so to share images.
And there's a lot of plugins.
Yep.
That like from iPhoto, I know from a Mac, you can just use
push Flickr. A button.
Yeah, I push one button, and you know, some people use their Facebook account for sharing photos. I use that a lot too.
Ben, what do you use?
I have played with Picasa. I've played with Flickr. I don't really have too much of a need to put photos online,
right.
though. So.
But Al and I are really the photo takers in the room.
Picasa and Facebook. Facebook for if I want to post stuff to Facebook, and Picasa if I want to post stuff to a blog.
Yeah. Okay, so you're hosting.
Well, what I'm using Google Sites to basically share pictures as well as like if I want to put up YouTube videos and stuff. I mean, I know I can do that with a Facebook account, but just one sort of site to direct traffic like my aunts and uncles or whatever.
On the contrary, you can't use Facebook for this because the other person has to be logged into Facebook to see it, even if you have it published for everyone. If the person doesn't have a Facebook account and they're not actually logged in, they'll get a broken image.
That's right. And that's why I actually use something like Flickr or SmugMug, because then I can actually email the hidden link to a lot of people and they can all see it without doing any kind of logging in.
Yeah, I think you're on the right track with Google
because
stuff.
The same thing. Yeah, I think you are too. Yeah. Definitely a good free choice. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thanks for the call.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Bye-bye. All right, we're going to take one more call, this one from Paso Lobos. Ed, welcome.
Thank you. I called a couple of weeks ago, and I had Opera, and my emails were getting blanked
That's right.
out.
That's right.
And so I stashed all the emails and cleaned Opera off and reinstalled it, and it happened to be went to 10.51 from 10.50, and it's okay now.
Great.
So there was a bug, but I have a new motherboard, and I'm putting a PCI multi in out parallel controller card for my ancient anchor called a LaserJet 3, and I can't get the computer to find that connection.
Right.
With that card to get my.
What is the connector type for that printer? Is it a parallel port?
Excuse me.
Is that connector type
a parallel
port?
Yes, parallel port.
And you're running
a PCI parallel controller card, and I can't get the computer to find it to hook it up.
And are you? Yeah.
I've never used the PCI ones. I've only ever used the USB to parallel.
Yeah, you might want to try the USB to parallel or the Ethernet to parallel. Those are pretty convenient in the sense that you just connect to your local network and it shows up. But it only works if the drivers exist for the printer to print that way.
And support
and
for those
printer
things.
Printer probably doesn't have that.
Yeah. I mean, unless people are actively
But the USB
ones drivers.
Actually is a parallel port. It just becomes a parallel port
available
to the machine. What OS are you using?
XP. Everything
and your motherboard is not...
Everything I'm doing is almost... ancient.
Yeah, because your mother and your motherboard does not have a parallel port on it.
After I purchased this card, I discovered it had option for a parallel port.
Depending on how you configured your BIOS, it's very possible that what's probably going on your motherboard, there's some pins, and on that pin set out, you could actually put a parallel port from those pins. But you have to have the manual and have to know where to plug them in. But lots of times, even though the machine doesn't have some visible sign of a parallel port, the actual parallel port interface is in there. The thing is, since it's not normally plugged in, the default BIOS setup for your machine would be to have disabled old peripheral support. So it's possible that BIOS setting is conflicting with your card, but I doubt it. This is one of those things that we're not going to be able to cover on air. You're going to need somebody to really start poking around your machine. But I would definitely look in your BIOS of your laptop, or of your motherboard, and see what's going on with parallel discovery.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
You betcha.
Oops, I goofed. Thanks, Geeks.
Bye-bye. Yeah, we're not exactly gentlemen.
Yeah. Who walked in?
let's cover some of these other things. Ben, you were going to talk about the galaxies?
I was going to talk about the galaxy, yes, but I think that might be a little bit too long for near the end of the show, so maybe I'll... I don't know.
Come on, what's up with the galaxies?
Okay. All right, so let me see if I can get through this. So basically, the universe is approaching about 14 billion years old. And when it was about 3.5 billion years old, about a quarter of its current current age, the rate of star formation and galaxy formation was a lot higher, right? And when we look into the further reaches of the universe, we see back in time to that time, right? Mm-hmm. And we found that we can only see about 10% the number of galaxies that we feel we should see based on our calculations. Hmm. So a big question in astronomy for a while has been, where are the other 90% of the galaxies, right? And I should just, for anyone who knows about dark matter, it has nothing to do with dark matter.
Okay,
this is
stuff
that's too far away.
That's where my brain went to.
Yeah, exactly. Where is the other 90%? So... So here's the quick rundown. When galaxies and stars form, we end up with ionized hydrogen gas clouds. So these gas clumps of hydrogen, which are kind of glowing out, right, because they're ionized. When electrons go between the energy states, when they're going from state 3 to state 2 or state 2 to state 1, they give off EM radiation, and that's what makes them glow. So from state 2 to state 1, it gives off a certain wavelength. We call it Lyman alpha radiation. And that's pretty easy to look for with our telescopes. And so that's what we've been looking for, to try and figure out what these galaxies are, how far or how many of them there are, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the way we've detected them. But of course, we've only seen 10% of what we feel we should see. Well, we actually just found the rest. Thank goodness. Whew, we'd lost them. And so the way we did it is we actually looked, instead of the Lyman alpha radiation, which is from electrons going from state 2 to state 1 in hydrogen, we looked for the H alpha line, which is from state 3 to state 2. So it's
why are those more prominent?
The reason that we can see those more, the reason that we can see all almost 100% of the ones that we calculate should exist is because the Lyman alpha light is not as red. And so it actually, here's the idea, is that as it was emitted, it was actually getting reabsorbed by those same gas clouds before it even left, right? And so
it's less of the light.
Exactly. So we were never seeing most of this Lyman alpha radiation.
And of course, doing the 3 to 4 state when it was reabsorbed. It's cool.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff. But H alpha radiation is a lot more red. And if you ever look at smog, for example, a lot of times you'll see the red light through a lot more than the blue light. Right.
Lower frequencies kind of seem to pass around things easier.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we can detect more galaxies with the H alpha, looking at the H alpha. Cool. And we did that with, I love the name of this array. It's the VLT, which stands for Very Large Telescope. It's this array of 4 telescopes that we were using.
It makes the news a lot lately.
It has been, cool. Definitely.
And it's basically multiple telescopes spread apart from each other and then synced up so that it actually is effectively the size of the separation. Really cool.
Yeah, it's 4 telescopes.
All right, thanks for the missing galaxy. So we're not as alone as we thought.
It's a really cool thing to be able to say, oh yeah, we just found the other 90% of the galaxies.
Now we just have to figure out what dark energy and dark matter are, and we're totally set. Thank you very much, Ben, for that. Miles, I did talk about the Russian genius thing and keep on passing it up, so what's going on? Quickly.
Okay, a Russian genius, I mean, he's been noted for his mathematics ability since he was a teenager. He won the Fields Medal which is kind of like the Nobel Prize, only it happens only once every 4 years
yes.
in math. But he turned it down. He's like, I don't care. I don't care about this accolade. And so he refused it. Mm-hmm. More recently, he has solved the Poincaré conjecture, which I don't have enough time to go into it. The spheres and circles. So leave it there. And it's a $1 million prize.
Did he accept
and
that one?
he's saying, like, no, I don't want it. I don't care. And you're like, and so people are trying to go to him saying, well, take the money and then give it to a charity. He's like, no, leave me alone. I don't care. I have everything that I want. Leave me alone. And he's even had reporters
that
come
sounds
in.
Sounds like a very logical brain.
Yeah. And reporters call him up on the phone and say, come on, do this. He's like, quit bothering me. I'm gathering mushrooms. Like,
he's got some nice eyebrows, too. That picture of him?
Well, right, he's...
Wow.
And it very much goes to show this idea of there are a lot of people who aren't motivated by money.
Yes.
In fact, it's the antithesis. Like, it causes some stress for them. And they do it for the sheer love of it. He didn't do this, even though it's the millennium, one of the... one conjecture or one problem that was part of the Millennium Prize, which is a series of problems, six or so. And he didn't care. He did it because he wanted to solve it, not for any accolades, awesome. Just because it was there.
You can learn more about that at geekspeak.org. Al, quick, really cool USB device.
Oh, there's one thing. It's called the Air Stash. Now, this isn't my crazy USB because that's later.
Of course not.
But this is actually a very cool device. It's called the Air Stash, and it's a plug-in key fob USB, and you plug it in, and then when you unplug it, it becomes a wireless hotspot. It doesn't have any storage on it, so you have to stick an SD card into it in a little slot. But it has basically a way that you can connect to it just as it's a Wi-Fi spot. So say you have this thing in your front seat, you can stream people in the back seat, if they each of them have an iPod Touch or something, they can stream movies individually to each different one. Different movies, you can share files, you can move files from your...
wirelessly from a USB fob.
All wirelessly from just a little key fob. It's an amazing device called the Air Stash. Not quite shipping
And when
quite
we
yet,
get
but,
one, we will definitely have to talk
oh, yeah,
about
this
it.
Is a neat thing, yeah.
And we'll be hearing Al's crazy USB of the week in just a second. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by the University of Advancing Technology, a private university offering master's degree programs focused on advanced technology. More information available at uat.edu/master's degree. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark online tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by the University... which I just covered. Well, I'll do it again. Of Advancing Technology, offering master's degree programs for geeks to become innovators of the future. uat.edu/master's degree. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kusp.org.
Howdy, everybody. This is Al Luckow with GeekSpeak's crazy USB device of the week. I know some of you folks out there grew up on a farm. You lived in a place where you had chickens. Or maybe you grew up with hippies and they had their own egg farm in the backyard. Well, either way, I've got something here that will remind you of home. It's a USB warm egg. Yep, a USB warm egg. You know, sometimes you just want a warm egg. No, not to eat, to hold. This thing plugs into your USB port, charges for about 3 to 5 hours, then you unplug it, and it's warm. I know what you're thinking. Hey, Al, that sounds just like about every other electrical device I own. You plug it in, and it gets warm whether you like it or not. Well, this one's different. This one plugs into your USB port, and it's in the shape of an egg. There you have it. It's called the USB warm egg.
Thank you, Al, for the crazy USB week. The geeks today were Miles Elam, Ben Jaffe, and Lyle Troxell. That was Al Luckow doing the crazy USB week. And answering the phones, Rick Philman. All our information is available at geekspeak.org. Stay tuned for Car Talk. Thanks for listening. See you next week.